WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I just woke Mark and Garland up. Anyway, this is Terry D. Kester. This is the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. And as always, it is a privilege to be here, not only with my colleagues, but with you, the listeners, and my colleagues are...
Mark Levine.
And...
Garland Nixon.
And we are the Raucous Caucus.
They were wondering, you know...
Garland's asleep.
Try to wake up, guys. Try to pay attention, you know. I mean, it's going to be a quiz after this show, so shape up. You know, these guys were wondering where, the Golden Studio, and where does that come from? Well, I'm sure you know, that all Rush Limbaugh has is a golden microphone.
That's right. Why
we have the golden studio.
I see. I've been looking for that gold because I know WPFW could use some cash.
Yes, yeah,
I was trying to find it and sell it, but I
yeah, we should
find
probably
it.
Scrape it off the walls and
use it. We really
you know.
Should.
It's on the other side of the studio.
Yeah.
Just on the other side of that rainbow.
Is that rainbow going down over top the program director's desk? That's where a pot of gold is.
You've been talking to too many leprechauns, Garland.
I feel like I've got Judy Garland in the booth. Anyway.
We do have some kind of Garland.
Similar.
We do have Garland. Yeah.
Over the rainbow or something
okay.
for you.
Hey, we had a show last week, a very interesting show. A lot of our listeners were singing Kumbaya during the show. But it was a good
show.
See,
I wasn't there, and look what happened.
Yeah,
apparently, Bedlam breaks loose.
No. It was a very, very sincere show, I guess, at the very least. You know, I mean, we talked about what individuals can do themselves, you know, in terms of this chaos that's going on, rather than trying to change the whole darn world. But what can you do yourself? And David, is our friend on? No, he hasn't called back. Okay, Jeff, if you're listening, give a call back. We'll try to get you in whenever you call back. And
why don't we give out the number, or does he know it?
He's got that. I'm not going to give it to everybody else, and now I'll start calling.
I want to invite everybody.
Next thing you know, we'll have live callers.
I like the callers, Garland and Terry. I don't know what your problem is.
We love the callers, but not until I let you guys get a little bit of airtime. Not much, but a little bit. Anyway, but I just mentioned this guy, Jeff, because, I mean, he had a great idea. We were talking about things you can do, and he had a great idea. And so, if you do call in, we'll get you on the air, and we'll let you introduce your idea that you were talking to us about after the show. It's simple, but it's wonderful. Anyway, guys, you know, I was going through the newspapers, and if you read my email, you notice I've read every newspaper in the entire world.
Terry had no idea what to talk about tonight, so he just kept looking through a ton of newspapers.
What's the newspaper? Never mind.
It's the internet. Sometimes they actually print it out. When you print
newspapers
it out from the screen,
you print out an article, and then
it becomes news on the paper.
And the only problem is you have to iron it all the time. But anyway, reading through the newspaper, I noticed one thing missing, and that was the bully pulpit. No matter what story I was reading about, be it about the economy, be it about Libya, whatever it was, there's no bully. Somebody stole the bully pulpit.
You know, there's plenty of bully pulpits. There's just no bullies.
Maybe someone castrated the president.
I don't know. But, I mean, I'm really getting discouraged about this. You know, I mean, we've got bullies like crazy in the Republican Party. You know, I don't want to talk about them. Nuts to them.
Do you want
to
tell people who may not know what the bully pulpit is, what that expression comes from? Theodore Roosevelt and
our
all
listeners,
of that?
Our listeners,
well, 99%
know?
Of them know who it is, but there's 1%.
Don't insult our listeners.
Hey, Terry.
Yeah?
Not all of us were around during Teddy Roosevelt's.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
We don't remember his presidency the way you do.
Okay, Mark, go ahead. If you want to inform the listeners about the bully pulpit. But because that 1% that may need to know and wasn't there with me.
That's right, Mark. Where did the term come from?
Yes, where, Mark, did the term come
bully,
from?
Bully, which was an expression used by Teddy Roosevelt.
Constantly.
Who pointed out that actually the president has more power than is found in the Constitution of the United States simply by virtue of the fact that he can speak and he can get things done that way when the gears of power are all gnarled up. And frankly, one of the best presidents to use the bully pulpit, I'm sorry to say, was Ronald Reagan. Whenever he had trouble travel with the Democratic Congress. He would go there and speak out of the Oval Office and say, my fellow Americans. I can't do it.
My fellow Americans.
And he would go there, and lo and behold, Americans would call their members of Congress, and he got through the Democratic Congress. A lot of things that
ain't happening now, guys, and that's my concern. You know,
President Obama has given one speech that I can recall. And if y'all can recall them all, let me know. One speech from the Oval Office, it had to do with troops in Afghanistan. I don't think he has used the Oval Office to give a speech other than that. Do you remember any other speech? I think it's just that.
No, he's usually at that podium, you know.
His way of doing things in the past has been town hall meetings.
Yeah.
During his presidency?
Yeah, that's right. You got to read the newspapers, Mark.
Instead of the
but those don't get hardly any press.
We got to get a subscription of the Washington Post for Mark.
They don't get hardly any press.
They get press if something like weird or something Jerry Springer-esque happens.
Right, something weird like that.
Otherwise, part of the reason he doesn't get any press because he's not doing anything besides campaigning. You know, I mean, it's really kind of, I mean, he's putting his foot in his mouth when he does speak. This whole thing about the war powers controversy, you know, he actually said the action in Libya doesn't constitute hostilities. Who's he kidding?
It was so easy to do the right thing because the majority of Republicans and Democrats support the war. Now, a minority don't. It would be a vote. He'd win the vote. Just put it to a vote. Why is he risking? I mean, look, I don't think anything's going to happen. It's not going to be impeachment. But what he's really doing is setting a precedent. He's killing the War Powers Act for future.
And you know something that you see interesting that you see here, and I've said it a million times. People will say George Bush is doing this, or Bill Clinton's doing this, or Barack Obama's doing this. The bottom line is this. When a person becomes president, they get tempted to do certain things. They get tempted to use that power in certain ways. This is not Barack Obama. Whoever's in president does it.
It's a Manchurian candidate. Someone's taking over.
I'm saying this is not about Barack Obama. That's why we have to be careful how much power you give the government, how much power you give the president, because whoever is there is going to be tempted to use the power that they have or to go a step further.
He's using it in a lot of ways, but not in constructive ways.
If the majority of Congress was against the Libyan war and he felt it was so important, so necessary, he was willing to risk a constitutional break and, you know, that's one thing. I mean, I don't know that I'd support it, but at least that would be some. Here, he had people who would do what he wanted them to do, and he was too lazy?
I don't get it.
Lawyers.
I don't think he knows how to do it. I really honestly don't.
It was an easy thing to do.
Don't you think he has lawyers advising him saying do this or that they got a little circle of people?
Every president in the United States.
But you're talking about the bully pulpit, and I don't think he really – I mean, maybe you got to call him, Mark, and give him the history of the bully pulpit.
If President Obama wants to call me – let me say something. I was at a Netroots convention last week in Minneapolis. That's why I was not here with you gentlemen.
We had
the deputy He was the communications director for the President of the United States, David Pfeiffer, got up there and delivered the most god-awful response that I think I've heard from any presidential advisor. Honestly, President Obama, you should fire him right now.
Whoa.
Because he took things. Look, it wasn't even the message. It was the way he said the message. It was like he was determined to make progressives angry. And he succeeded. Congratulations. But, you know, even if he had said the same thing in a different way, he could have. I can't believe he's the communications director. Any person in that room, in that entire room in Minneapolis, any blogger there of the thousand of us could have gotten up there and done a better job than a quote communications director. The President of the United States couldn't find somebody better?
Apparently not.
I mean, you talk about the bully pulpit. If the president's not using it, why can't we find some, I don't know, charismatic, intelligent person to
Well, I mean, Terry. Yeah, exactly right. Thank you. And thank you for mentioning
that. Even you, Terry, would have done a better job.
And I say that with trepidation. Trepidation, yeah. You know, but I mean, it goes beyond Obama. I mean, where's Reid? You know, where's
Reid never had a person.
No, I know, but I mean, he's not taking a bold stand really and working. I mean, part of the thing that's going on here that's really kind of frightening is it seems like we're going back into the past where the only thing that's going to happen is, you know, behind closed doors, you know, backroom deals. I mean, we're not doing things. You know, somehow we've given up doing things in public. We don't have a leader here that can inspire people and get the public motivated. So we have to go back into the, you know, dark rooms, get a few cigars, and beat each other up until you get some kind of deal. You know, all Obama's saying, what is this golf summit, for pity's sakes?
Well, you know what? Oh, my God.
One of the things I see here is it's basically old, good old-fashioned kind of party machine politics, you know, where the power, the center of power in the machine of a given organization, be it the Democrats here, the central power cogs of the machine get together and slowly, grindingly turn the wheels of progress and get a little bit done at a time, and they don't stick their toes out too far, and they don't, and nothing happens.
And worse than that, they don't get any support from the American people. I mean, the American people are being ignored at this point.
They all agree with us.
Yeah.
There's always been two sides of Washington. For 220-odd years, there has always been a public Washington and a private Washington. There's always been backroom deals. That's not going to change. Well, the difference is now there's only one side to Washington. Yeah,
exactly.
There's only the backroom deals.
Exactly.
It used to be when the backroom deals, as Garland was saying, as the grinding came to a halt, some politician, usually the President of the United States, went public and helped grease those wheels.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, Reagan, you know, did it to our detriment.
What?
Barack Obama has a great voice. Barack Obama, at least the guy that ran for president in 2008, remember him?
Yeah.
Senator Obama?
Yeah.
Well, don't you wish he'd been elected president?
Yeah, right.
Because he was charismatic. He was powerful. He talked about the reasons behind progressive ideals.
I mean, I was at that convention, you know, when he first spoke, and I said, holy cow, this man is going to do something, you know?
And I don't know where he left his
chutzpah. I don't know what it is.
I was going to use a word that
it appears that – now, don't get me wrong. Barack Obama has done some very good things, but I will say this. He came to Washington, and Washington changed him.
I don't want to believe that. Him.
But, you know, we're in a crisis situation. These clowns up there in their back room, you know, just, you know, if they get to a point where they get, you know, raise the debt ceiling and do something about the deficit, if they do that, I mean, A, that's going to screw us. I mean, it really is. There's no question about it. And then 2012, the Bush tax cuts expire again. And they're going to have the same battle then. 2014, if the Republicans get what they want, which they seem to be getting what they want, they're going to have automatic cuts, you know, which is a great way of Congress, you know, abrogating their responsibility again. And the deficit is going to grow because of the tax cuts. This is the actual amount is going to grow by $4 trillion in the next decade.
President Obama is
and he's not doing anything.
Is fiddling while Rome burns. And
yeah,
there's no greater
there's
no greater example of that than that golf game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, here it is. You got four guys dressed in golf clothes playing golf while the country is – I mean, could he look more out of touch?
Yeah.
I mean,
when he was playing ping pong and, you know, all of that. I mean, when he was abroad in Europe.
At least there he's doing diplomacy, right? He's doing –
I have a friend who was, you know, on that tour, an Associated Press reporter. It was there on the tour, and I asked, you know, what was that tour for? I mean, I know there must have been some reason, you know, but all that we were getting here was, you know, the
part
ping
of it
pong.
Is the press.
Yeah.
The press is going to focus on the ping pong and the golf, and they're not going to focus on the substance.
But her reply was, you know, well, it was just to meet people. I mean, there wasn't any agenda.
Yeah.
How dare he go away during the crisis in the country? We got half the country on fire. We got floods in the other half. Tornadoes whipping through. The economy's going down in the tank.
Here's the other thing, too.
And he's out of town.
And this is what, you know what? I wouldn't mind. He could play all the golf he wanted, ping pong, pool, and everything else. If he was on track with what we need. Here's the problem. If you look at the polls, they overwhelmingly agree with us.
Right.
What do people want? People want
jobs.
One, two, jobs.
Gotcha.
And three, my suspicion is jobs. People want them to focus
on
jobs.
They want the economy to be better. They want it to grow again. They want their housing prices to go up again.
People are looking at our government saying, look, we don't know what you can do about jobs, but try to do something. Well, they are doing something. They're causing some of them to go away. What they're doing is everyone's saying, we're concerned with jobs, and they're saying, okay, you're concerned with jobs, right? We got you covered. We're going to cut some more money. We're going to lay off some federal employees. We'll lay off these kind of, everybody's getting laid off. The American people are saying one thing, and I don't know what planet our government is on. We got to cut. And we're like, really?
Last week at the Netroots convention, the communications director, Dan Pfeiffer, was asked, do you have a jobs bill? Now, he could have said, we've got several jobs bills. Here's the one we have. It would do this. It would do this. The Republicans are stopping us. We need your help to call and get them to do the right thing and elicited our support. Y'all do great. You know, bloggers, get out there. Help us. That's not what he said.
Uh-oh.
What he said is, and if you want, I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. It's very painful to watch. I warn you. Be sitting down when you watch it. He said, we have several initiatives. Period. Didn't say what they were. Didn't say. So the host,
laughable.
No, the host, who was admittedly a bit snarky, but she was getting upset. I understand why. Said, so no jobs bill.
Good for her.
And he said, well, no, there's a jobs bill. And she said, what does it do? And he said, it helps get jobs or something to that effect.
Is he a Republican?
And then when she pushed him again, he said, well, you know, it's hard. The Republicans are blocking everything. That's what he said after being pushed. In other words, you had to push him 3-4 times to get the message that the Republicans. The thing is, the sad thing is, we do have jobs bills. We do have those that are being put forward. The president does have a plan. His communications director may not be aware of the president's plan.
Well, is Obama aware of his plan?
Well, let me tell you something about the Republicans blocking them. You know, I watched the...
Why don't we talk about that? Harry Truman talked about a do-nothing
Congress.
You
better believe it.
You know, I watch basketball, and in basketball, there's a block shot. In order to have a block shot, you got to shoot.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
So in order for the Republicans to block some jobs bills or block jobs initiatives... You gotta put them forward. Okay, America, here's my jobs initiative, here's my jobs bills. Now you, America, go hassle our Republicans
exactly.
And make them go along. But if there was something there, why aren't they
telling
us?
If the president's communication director can't tell us what here's what, President Obama, you listening? Because I know you listen to the Rockets Caucus. He's a regular fan.
If you don't, you should. I mean, you came down the bench, Chili Bowl. Come on down the bench next door.
It's just a few blocks from here. It's just a few blocks from here. President Obama,
I know. And you know where it's at.
I know you're tuned in. Or at least some of his advisors. Here's what you do, all right? And you know what? You don't have to give me credit for it. You sit there and you set up an Oval Office speech. For, you know, 8 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern time on a Thursday.
Well, he's going to do this Wednesday.
And you say,
is it tomorrow or the next week?
About Afghanistan.
He always does it about Afghanistan. Yeah. The Americans just want our troops out of Afghanistan.
Well, do you know what their cut is proposed for that, to give you an example?
30,000.
10,000.
Well, before we get to Afghanistan.
It's meaningless.
Before we get to Afghanistan, let me just give my plan. And then, so he sits down and he says, my fellow Americans, We've got problems. We've got unemployment ever since – we have the greatest depression since the Great Depression. I've told you that's the case. I wanted a higher stimulus. The Republicans didn't give us a higher stimulus. All the economic indicators said we need a jobs bill. We need it now. I have proposed a plan. We need more infrastructure. You know what? Infrastructure's great.
But that's what they did
during the Great Depression. They built bridges, and they're crumbling, and labor is cheap, and interest rates are cheap. We need to do that now, and I need you to call your member of Congress because John Boehner is blocked. It.
That's exactly. The
other thing he has to do, which he has never done, which is what really upsets me, if he gave a speech like that, Mark, then you have to follow it up. It's not just a one event thing.
Sure.
You keep on pushing it.
You do it on your tours, and you get the press to follow you, and you get the people to start chanting jobs.
And the president says, I'm working for you. I'm trying for you. Okay. All right. Well, Mark, calm down. Take a breath here. We got Jeff on the line here. So I just want to, you know, we're going to calm down for a moment. We'll get back to this topic. Don't worry about it. Get back to it very quick. This is totally off topic, but it came out of last week's show. And we talked, Jeff came up after the show, and spoke to Garland and I, and we had, Garland, help my brain work. Who was our guest host?
Joel Siegel.
Thank you. Joel Siegel with us as well. And we were talking about, this is totally off topic here from what we are tonight, but I just wanted to give him a chance to tell you his idea because it's interesting and it's clever and it has a profound little effect and it's so darn obvious.
And he's one of our listeners and he came up to Ben's Chili Bowl, Ben's next door to see us.
And you could do that too next week when we're going to be back there.
That's right.
And we love him.
That's right. But anyway, Jeff had a novel idea of just something you can do on your own in terms of, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, withdrawing from the empire. We're talking about getting off the grid, creating your own energy situation, all the kind of things you can do as an individual to contribute to change. Jeff, welcome to the Raucous Caucus, and tell us again your profound but simple but clever and effective idea.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. It was a pleasure meeting you at the Chili Bowl last week.
Well, come on back.
come back there one time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put a dryer, clothes dryer, up in my attic.
I mean, this, you know, this is great. I mean, this sounds attic. Okay, why?
It's simple that the heat is already there to cool or dry my clothes, and so I don't have to use the electricity that's in the heater part of the dryer in order to dry the clothes. The heat is already there from the heat in the attic.
And what did you say the temperature was? Actually, it gets to be in an attic, your attic, or a normal attic?
It probably gets to about 120 degrees. Today in Virginia is about 95 degrees outside. So it's a nice toasty 120 degrees up in the attic. And that's probably just a little less than what it would be in the clothes dryer in your laundry room in your house.
Mm-hmm.
I did buy not an electric dryer, but I bought a gas dryer. Mm-hmm. It normally would use natural gas to heat up. And my wife is a little bit worried that I might burn down the house. My dryer doesn't have any other heat going to it, so I don't have gas piped into my attic. So that's actually my wife burning the house down.
And that's illegal, too.
Yeah, that's correct.
But you don't need it.
Because the dryer simply sucks in the ambient air, which is 120 degrees. Yeah. It just tumble dries it.
Yeah, and in case you didn't know, with your regular dryer, I mean, it's the electric element that's going to be using the most energy, you know, more than just turning the tub. That doesn't take much of energy at all.
That's right.
Well, Jeff, you know, it's a simple idea. It's clever, and it's effective. And
the other thing it does is it... if you dry your clothes inside the house in the summertime and you air condition your house, then you also have to take that heat back out of the house by the air conditioner.
Right.
So
right.
it saves energy on air conditioning as well.
Wow. Well, Jeff, you're thinking like all of us should be thinking. And, you know, we really appreciate it. We appreciate you coming by at Ben's Next Door last week. We appreciate you coming and talking to us. You get any more of these good ideas, Jeff, you got to let us know.
And we'll be there next week if
we
want to.
Yeah,
we are there every second and fourth. And when there is a fifth Tuesday, fifth Tuesday.
Yeah,
and
we'll be there.
We've met a lot of you folks, and we want to meet more. 1211 U Street. Come on down. You
7
can
o'clock.
Have a half smoke or whatever you want at Ben's Next Door. And come see us. I'll tell you.
And bring some ideas.
Yeah. Definitely seem to enjoy it. I know we have a good time.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I mean, with people like Jeff, and again, thank you so much, Jeff, for getting back in touch with us. I really appreciate it. You know, the thing is, too, that we get guests there who come and bring us ideas. I mean, you know, it's really a wonderful conversation, sometimes even more lively after the show than during the show.
You know what? And this is one of the great, best-kept secrets in D.C. Does anyone know of any other live radio shows that go out in Washington, D.C.?
They did it in the 1930s, so I'm sure Terry remembers
I do.
Is there anywhere in D.C.
where you can go to a live radio show, sit in the audience where there's a microphone there, and you can stand up and you can talk on a 50,000-watt FM station?
And have a half smoke.
I don't know
that there's anywhere in the country, much less in Washington, D.C.
So join us next Tuesday, 7 o'clock. This, by the way, of course, is the Raucous Caucus. This is WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica.
In Washington, D.C.
And we will now get back to our topic. And
in fact, the
bully pulpit. Who stole the bully pulpit? I mean, all of these issues are not being addressed.
Well, I think what we're really doing, let's be clear. We're complaining about the president.
We're complaining about the president, but we're complaining about there's something wrong. There's something wrong. You mentioned
the community. Well, what do you think, Terry?
Let me throw this in. And the other thing is this. If you look at what's going on right now, here are three people who are progressive, who supported the president,
absolutely,
who supported everything he stood
for.
Guys
who
have, over the course of the last couple years of his, we've said, oh, that's great, and he do that when he does something good or complain when he does something bad. We're the people right now, he's running for president, that should be out there knocking on doors and handing out bumper stickers and saying, go Obama, go Obama. Instead, we're, you know,
one of the things
he's got to see he has a problem.
Yeah.
I'm gonna vote for him too. But I mean, am I going to go out and give money and campaign hard?
No, but there's some
because
kind of
I know the alternative.
Right.
And one other thing I want to bring in, it's not my idea. It was brought up by some columnist, and I forget who it was. But, you know, and I even sort of hate to say this, but I think there's some truth to it. And then we're going to get some of our calls in here. So don't go away. And our number is 202-588-0893. And we'll start to get some callers and get some of your ideas on who stole the bully pulpit. But the thing I was going to mention is a columnist, there were a number of Republicans who just really began to say, whoopee, we're with a President Carter kind of situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really are kind of feeling that. And the columnist's point was the short time that Obama was in the Senate, which was a short time, you know, he really didn't create those relationships and those friendships that, whether we like it or not, are part of the Washington game. And, you know, there seems to be...
He needs to untether his vice president because he's got... Joe Biden has those relationships.
Biden, yeah, but, you know, without those connections, I mean, look at someone like LBJ, you know, who was...
LBJ forced those relationships. Yeah.
But don't fool yourself. The Republican Party we're dealing with today is a new animal.
Well, that's
true. To the right of the Republic. This party
hasn't got those friendships with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, you're right. But the Republican Party today is far to the right of the Republican Party under George W.
They're
Bush.
They're also doing things the Democrats would never consider doing. You know what they've said now? No, the president gets no nominees. He can't appoint any nominees unless he dismantles what Congress voted for with a filibuster-proof majority. In other words, some protection for consumers from Wall Street stealing all their money.
And
this
the question is, but
the people don't even know they're doing it. They're saying,
but
the
question
president
is,
gets no nominees. That's never been done in American history before.
I don't care what the Republicans are doing at this point.
He's got to call them on it. That's
right. I mean, why isn't he standing up and saying, look what the Republicans
bypass
are doing?
And go to the American people.
That's right.
And tell the American people.
Head.
Hey, come beat these people in the head and make them do what we got to do.
That's what Harry Truman did.
Metaphorically speaking.
That's what Franklin Roosevelt did.
You know?
Give them hell, Barack.
We're going to have to take a quick break here, but before we take the break, we got time to get one call to get in. And
we ask the others to stay on the line.
Ray and Steve and Tom, stay on the line, and we're going to be talking to Teeter here. Welcome to join us, and I've mispronounced your name. Please let me know. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Teeter, you there?
Talk to us. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, when all is said and done, I should like to say this, that no matter what anybody says, the truth of the matter is all of these Western leaders, at least most of them, and this one in particular, they have all struck a Faustian bargain before they got in these respective positions, and that is to sell us out. So all this talk is really meaningless. What you have to emphasize is that long before Obama, Clinton, Bush, Reagan ever got into office, that was agreed on. Read Economic Hitman and you see what I'm talking about. And that is that these people, they're not representing us. They're representing the corporate interests. They don't give one hoot about us all. Look at Bush, for example. He has already made $15 million in speeches that he's alleged to have made. He made. He didn't write a word of it, as I'm sure you know that. And this is just payback. Where is he giving these speeches? The very same people who robbed us, the Wall Street crowd, etc., etc. And this is what is going on. It is quid pro quo. They have robbed us all blind, and this was agreed on before they ever got into office. And if they don't do what they are asked to do and they're told to do, then they end up with, like John F. Kennedy. So
they don't. Well, maybe not that, but they don't get any money.
With all respect to you, gentlemen, I know you're doing your best. But the truth of the matter is, this Faustian bargain that was agreed on by these leaders, in inverted commas, in all the Western countries, but maybe for a few, and in particular the United States.
Now, all right, Teeter, we're going to have to take a break. I'm sorry, Teeter, but we're right at that magic time where we do have to, by FCC regulations, take our break. This is the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry DeKester with
Mark Levine.
And Garland Nixon.
WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. We'll be right back with you.
Hi, this is Elise Bryant. If you can hear my voice, then you know that there's a vast desert out there known as the mainstream media. WPFW is an oasis for your body, mind, and spirit. So won't you take a moment now to become a member of WPFW? Visit us at WPFW.org.
Into the Night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
I was going to try to imitate the Woo, but I can't do it tonight. Anyway,
thank you, Terry. Yeah, you're not doing that.
Hey, I've done it many times, and the listeners love it. They come up and hug me. Anyway, this is the Raucous Caucus.
I haven't seen that.
Well, you ought to join us more often.
I think you leave town, you go out of town,
and you know, Garland and I get these hugs and everything else. We get money thrown at us. You know, it's really been pretty exciting.
Terry, you are a master of your own delusions. I'll say that.
This is the Raucous Caucus.
The fountain of misinformation.
Deluded or not, this is the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry D. Kester. My enemies, our colleagues across from me are
Mark Levine
and Garland Nixon.
Comrades.
We are on 89.3
FM. Mark has a red shirt. I do.
Yeah. Teeter, who just gave us a call, had talking about the Faustian bargain and had some very good points. And we were sort of even debating that, of course, as we debate everything during the short little break we have. And, you know, I don't believe that there's necessarily a Faustian bargain ahead of time, but you wind up beholden before you ever get in office. There's no question about that. You know, somehow or other, you are beholden. You're getting a couple million dollars from all these organizations, and you are stuck. I mean, that's the way our system is.
It all has to do with money.
It really does. It has to do with the fact
we don't have public financing. It all has to do with the fact that Citizens United said corporations can spend unlimited billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. We talk about that virtually every show because it's the meta problem.
It's the problem underlying all problems.
President Obama has to some extent. I wish he didn't, but you know, Russ Feingold, who didn't, unfortunately, is no longer senator. Obama's got to raise money, and he doesn't just raise money from you and me and people who give him a dollar. I wish people would give him a dollar, $5, $20, because then he wouldn't be so beholden to corporate interests.
But that ain't going to happen.
He goes and he has to raise money. But I want to say this where I disagree with Teeter, and I thought Teeter said a lot of very interesting things. It's one thing to say that Obama is partly beholden to corporate interests. I think he is. I don't dispute that.
He's on Capitol Hill.
But to say that he is entirely beholden the way George Bush is, to put him in the same category as Bush and Reagan, I don't think that's unfair. If you want to say the Republicans are 100% corrupt and the Democrats are 50% corrupt, I might agree with you. But we still, I think it's fair to say, one of the things that they're trying to undo right now is this financial reform package, the one to keep Wall Street from screwing us over again, to protect consumers. The Republicans are so scared of that, they're actually, as I said, stopping all nominees of the President of the United States until he tries to withdraw
from that. He has done some good.
He's done some good, too.
Even when he's done good, he hasn't provided leadership
in getting it. You're right.
That's what's so sad. Be it single payer, be it financial reform, be it cap and trade, whatever it is, he hasn't provided the leadership. And that's what we need for a president to do. And he's not doing it. And the only reason I'm even going into this topic, because I know that I agree with Teeter on some of the parts in terms of he's beholden. The only reason is somehow the American public, which means you and me and everybody else listening, we have got to demand of this man. I want you to call him up every single day and say, when are you going to lead?
You know, the comment I was going to make based on everything he said, he talked about all the Western leaders and what they were doing and blah, 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 and how, they're selling us. And regardless of what conspiracy theories, how they're getting to where they are, the bottom line is the final product is coming out. It's not a pretty sight and it's not benefiting the common man. What I was going to say was this. All the talk about the leaders and how they're giving us the shaft, et cetera, I'll say this. The people in Egypt figured out how to deal with it. Didn't they? The people in Egypt figured out how to deal with it.
We have a democracy. We don't need to overthrow the guy.
Wait a minute. They didn't overthrow anybody. They all went out in the streets.
All right.
They all took to the streets. They put the pressure on the government, and the government had to act. They figured out it. They looked at their government. They said, our government's not giving us what we want. We look at the government. We say, America says jobs, and you say, cut. That's not what we want. So then the question becomes, if they can figure it out and they can get what they want by going to the streets in a peaceful manner, and we're not doing it, let's stop blaming them.
You know what the problem is, when you watch this international situation, and particularly you look at the people of Syria, is the incredible courage.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I'm going to say it, but Americans don't have that courage at this point. And hopefully they can find it.
There's
but
a new expression that's coming out for what the president's doing. They call it leading from behind. Seriously, that's what I'm saying. Obama is a leader from behind. He waits till the country goes in one direction, and then he says, hey, wait for me, wait for me. I'm very disappointed. President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Franklin, in the midst of the worst times of New Deal, would give fireside chats. And every week, people would gather around the radio to hear inspiring words from the president. We're going to make it through, and here's what we need to do. And he won a landslide despite the Great Depression in 1936. Yep. I mean, you talk about Syria. Why hasn't President Obama said Assad needs to go?
But let me say this. Yeah. You know what? Why is he
waiting for events? He needs to leave.
But history, we got to go to our cause. But history tells us, if you look at the civil rights movement, there was nobody on their, there wasn't people on their side in the White House. There wasn't people on their side.
That's right.
What did they do? They had no money. They had no power.
They had no political power.
They had nothing.
People had courage. They went to the streets.
That's right.
And they said, we're not going to take this anymore. And they got what they wanted. Yeah. The people in Egypt did it. History tells us that if people, regular people, you don't need money. You don't need anything. You have power by your numbers. So I say we complain a lot about Obama, but if we're not going out here and we haven't had enough that we're going to go walk out in the streets and just do nothing but stand there and look if nothing else,
then how can we blame them? I mean, I still wonder, and we've talked about it with John Conyers, and we're still trying to find ways to do it. You know, the three of us are trying ways to do it. You know, but why haven't we had a demonstration?
They had the Tea Party. We need the American Dream Party.
You know, but have a demonstration that just with all the poor people, with all the unemployed
middle
people.
Income. No, middle with, class. No, it's
wait,
not
wait,
just
wait,
the poor.
Wait, just, you know, all the unemployed.
Working
people.
The middle class are all, poor now.
That's true.
I'm not going to discriminate. The point is, you know, I don't care if you're a Tea Party or not. The issues are basically the same. The fear is the same.
Yep.
The threat is the same. There is no reason there shouldn't be about 1.5 million people in the streets of Washington standing outside of Congress and saying, you've got to change.
And
outside the White House, you've got to change.
We help President Obama when we push him. We actually help him. We help him.
Yes. If he can be helped.
Because when we push him from the left and we say, hey, you made these promises. We're just asking you to do what you promised to do in 2008. And he suddenly gets out there and if he leads from behind, we need to push him until he sees where the direction is going and then jumps out in front.
So he can find the front, right.
That's right.
Let's go to a couple of our callers here. Ray, solve all this problem. Who stole the bully pulpit?
Well, Terry, I'm a beat up on you because Mark and Garland are young. They can be idealistic.
Yeah, we're ignorant. We don't know much.
And buy hope, the hope dream. In the previous caller,
he was dead on.
Here's the thing. Obama is in there because of who he is. In other words, you guys are saying, where's the leadership? Where is he? Why is he more aggressive? Why is he getting angry? That's how the filter system works. If he was that type of man, especially that type of black man, the angry black man who's going to get it done, he would have never been elected in the first place. You know, when Jackie Robinson was not the best black ball player, why did they let him in? Because he was conciliatory. He would not get angry when he was called the N-word, and they knew he had the, quote, temperament to handle it. Well, Barack has the right temperament, and the temperament is, I'm going to work for the Fortune 10 companies. I'm going to make sure I please them, and I'm not going to rock the boat.
So, Ray, should we have voted for Hillary?
Should
we have voted for Hillary, Ray? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry.
I want to know if you think we should have voted for Hillary Clinton. Would she have had the passion that Barack Obama lacks?
All right. She has more guts. She has more guts.
It's sad. Listen, I'm so glad you said that. Absolutely. Hillary would have been a stronger white male in the office than Barack.
Yeah, but you got to answer one question.
He's a brother. He's married to an African American woman. He's got a beautiful family. But the filter does not allow the type of man, especially black man, in that office that the three of us or the four of us would want. That's the dilemma.
Hang on, Ray. Garland's got a question.
I guess it's rhetorical. When you say, okay, Hillary would have done this or that, then the question becomes, who ran pretty much all of our financial regulatory agencies who runs them under the Obama administration? A bunch of retired Goldman Sachs people, right? Who ran them under the Bush administration? A bunch of retired Goldman Sachs board members. Who ran them under the Clinton administration?
Same
a bunch of retired Goldman Sachs
guys.
board members. So when you say, well, Hillary, well, gee, I guess Hillary wouldn't have had a bunch of retired Goldman Sachs board members running the financial regulatory agencies like the last 9 million presidents in a row.
But during the campaign, she didn't have Rubin and Summers as her advisors, and Obama did.
But she had, but you know what? She had some kind of the people.
Well, I mean, not the quartet.
Sometimes I think if you just uncork Biden, that he's more American.
Now you're talking my language.
I've always liked Joe Biden. I've always liked Vice President. And I feel like he is sometimes more connected to the people, to the working man.
I know
man,
he
to,
is. To, you know, I mean, and, nothing and, else. He's been on Amtrak.
It's interesting what Ray said. Look, I know people.
Ray, thank you very much.
The only thing I want to clarify
with Ray is just one simple thing. I'm not that much older. You know, I mean, you know, I'm more mature, but I'm not that much older.
Go ahead. Tell that to Teddy Roosevelt next time you see him. Ray, I understand what you're saying about the angry black man. I agree with you that if he'd come off as Malcolm X, he had no chance, or even frankly as Jesse Jackson or Sharpton, he never would have been elected.
Or Terry, for God's sake.
I'll tell you something, and it's a fine line. It's a fine line, I admit it, but I do think there is a distinction between passion and anger. You can be passionate about your cause without showing anger. Now, maybe he needs to show anger. I mean, I said give him hell the way Harry Truman did. Talked about the do-nothing Republican Congress.
He's not passionate.
But he's never. Well, you know what? I take that back.
He is not passionate.
What, I remember a certain Senator Obama speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Denver and inspiring me like nothing, and I thought that was a lot of passion.
Well, but,
I
you
think
know
he's
what, Mark,
got it.
But you know what?
That's campaign.
No, but let me say this.
Does he not believe it?
No, the passion is to be elected.
But there's a difference between speaking passionately.
That's a little harsh.
There's a difference
between
speaking passionately and acting boldly and passionately.
Yes.
Because I've seen a couple instances where the president has spoken passionately since he's been president. But taking bold action, being able to go against the grain, or saying, look, I'm in charge. I'm the one who decides which way the grain goes in the first place. And that's not what we've seen.
No, it isn't. Let's get back to some of our callers here. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us on the Raucous Caucus.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen.
Hi, Steve.
First off, I wanted to thank you all for giving a plug to my sister, Carolyn Romano.
Oh, yes. She designed a terrific poster for us down there.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. You got to come down and see it sometime.
Please do.
I'll be there by and by.
Next week.
Having said that, I got some serious bones to pick.
All right. Go for it. I don't know quite where to start. All right.
You know, I mean, you're putting down Obama as becoming a corporate sellout, but, you know, if he was going to sell out, he had that opportunity out of Harvard, and he passed it up to do some righteous stuff.
That's true. Yeah, I might call him a personal sellout.
Now, as far as not voting for him but not willing to support him, you know, you might as well vote for any toothy, smiley specimens the Republicans finally come up with.
None of us are supporting the Republican Party. I want to be clear about that.
I mean, you know, what we have to say to Obama is we know that you are trapped in a system that does not work.
I think he wants to do the right thing. I have never challenged his motivations. That's why I disagree with you, Terry. I've never challenged his personal motivations. I think he wants to do the right thing.
I think we can help him do the right thing. That's a sad thing to say. You know, and I hope that's not true. Because if he wants to do the right thing,
I think he does.
And doesn't, then what does that say about
him?
He doesn't know how to work the system.
I am not saying I don't see Barack Obama as a sellout. I'm not putting, you know, imputing bad, you know, motives on him. I'm not saying I like the guy. I love the guy. And I'm not complaining about what he's – to be honest, I'm not as much complaining about what he's doing as what he's not doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
He's not selling what he's doing. It's the bully pulpit.
What he's doing is he seems to be easing along with the tide. Sometimes he comes across as a leaf blowing in the wind.
Yeah, leading from
behind. You can't be that in the president. It's not good. I love Barack Obama. Am I going to support him? Yes. Am I going to?
Of course.
Am I going to vote for him?
Of course.
Yes. Am I, you know, have a bumper sticker? Well, I don't do bumper stickers, but if I did, I'd have a Barack Obama bumper sticker. I'm simply saying, if you're there and you're supposed to be my guy, I want you to
go on, fight.
Do something.
Fight for us.
Fight the good fight. Lose. Okay, lose.
Yeah, I'd be okay with it.
And Terry's right. In that monstrous broken system you're in, you may very well lose most of the fights. But you might win one every now and then.
You gotta try.
But fight the good fight,
man.
And our country, more than any time that I know of, really needs to have a couple of victories.
We need a leader.
Victories that deal with what the common person needs. And we are being sold out on such a level and to such a degree, it is absolutely criminal. I mean, we are in for really. I started the show last week, and I will remain with that starting the show again. The basic point is, Americans, you are screwed.
You know what?
And you better understand that, and you better start to act. You know, you can't. We can't.
I
want to
say you are being screwed, because that suggests that you could still change it. Well, I never want to be so pessimistic as to say there's no hope. Never. I will never
there
do
is,
that.
There is no.
Maybe that's my
no,
relative.
There
youth,
is no hope.
But I'm not giving up yet.
There is no hope unless we get active, and I mean that.
Well,
unless
see,
we get it. Active, that's it.
And, let's see what Tom thinks.
Okay, Tom. What happened to the bully pulpit? Where'd it go?
Who stole the bully pulpit?
Yeah.
Conservative pundits. I'll be quick.
All right.
Think back to the first few months of the Obama administration. Obama was out there all the time. And Charles Krauthammer and George Will started hammering him for being the most verbose president.
I do remember that.
That we'd ever had.
That lasted about 2 months.
Overexposed. And it worked. Obama pulled back.
He scared. They scared him? That's why he
pulled back?
Is
that what you're
back?
Saying, Tom?
That's what I think.
Huh.
I'm not saying that's the whole thing, but I think that's part of it.
I remember that, and it only lasted
you know,
about 2 months.
You know, but that doesn't explain to me, Tom, why he sat down before even single payer was dead, why he sat down with all the insurance executives in secret meetings.
Why? You know, because he wanted to get something passed and he knew they could kill him.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
that's the truth.
You
know,
Terry, and why did he sit down with all the oil companies?
But you know what? Terry, let me say this. The way the rules are played there, if somebody has to sit down and make deals with the devil to get something done, you know what? I can live with that. I can live with deals with the devil.
Yeah, but that obviously isn't what happened.
Let me tell you what. This is what I don't like. This is what I don't like. When the Republicans say, we gotta cut, we gotta cut, we gotta cut, if you don't cut, again, cut, we're gonna do this, and the only thing we have to do in this country is cut. And you don't say, that's not the game, we gotta make jobs. That you don't stop them in their tracks when they're seeing something that A, isn't gonna work, that B, is gonna make things work, and that C, the majority of the American people don't even agree with, that instead you say, well, yeah, I guess you're right. Let's go.
You don't say, this is not the time to make the economy smaller.
No,
this is not the time to make the economy shrink.
I mean,
this is not the time.
Talk to me in two years. They're laying off federal employees.
They're laying off state employees.
Yeah.
Are you aware that in state employees, something like 40% of the people have been laid off?
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
We're talking economic tragedy.
I heard like 450,000 this year are coming up.
As John Boehner said, if it increases unemployment by 900,000 jobs, I'm willing to live with it. Why isn't there an ad put out by, I don't know, George Soros, we need your help, but progressive.
Yeah, hello, George.
I don't know who it is, but why aren't we running some of those 527 ads quoting him and saying, you know, I'm okay with high unemployment.
Well, because he didn't finish the sentence that would have said, because that's going to ensure that this guy don't get elected.
Yeah.
Hollywood, hello? Where are the rich liberals funding those ads?
That's a good question.
It's not just Obama.
You know,
it's really our allies.
Well, that's what I said before. Like, American people don't have courage. I mean, what the heck is Spielberg?
Well, some of us can't afford courage.
What is Spielberg?
We can go out in the streets, but we can't afford those ads.
What is Spielberg and everybody else doing going to a dinner paying $35,000 and then not following through with
something like that, an advertisement?
Who is standing up? The Democratic Party can put those ads out. We're wrecking the studio here. We're getting so excited. Let's get a call
One
right
last thing. One last thing. You have people that came to power, that took over the House, that said, our number one imperative, our number one job here is to make sure that this guy doesn't get elected in 212.
That's right.
What do you think they're doing and thinking of when they strike bargains with you? They've already told you what their number one objective is. So if they strike a bargain with you, it's not to make the economy better.
They want the economy worse because they know it's going to hurt Obama.
Priority 1 through 9 is, make sure Obama loses. Everything else starts at priority 10. And you strike a bargain with him, you're going along with their plan.
Yeah, which only leads to the basic question I'm asking. Why hasn't he, I mean, knowing that, why doesn't he stand up to him?
James has the answer.
James has the answer.
All right, James, help us out.
You guys are pretty raucous.
we're a little,
we live by our name.
That's it.
Well, I've agreed with almost everything I've heard everyone say this evening. I got to say this. I want to defend the president.
Okay.
I think he's doing the best job he possibly could under the circumstances. And I don't think there's any point in fighting fights that you know you're going to lose, as some of you have suggested he should have done. I'd also like to say, if we want to compare him to other presidents, when you compare him to FDR, FDR was a member of the American aristocracy, and the climate was such at that time that he could have an affair, and the press wouldn't even report on it.
It's a different time.
Barack Obama cannot even take one wrong step before, you know, the aforementioned George Will, Charles Krautheimer will jump on him.
But you know That's true. Harry Truman was not a member of the aristocracy. Nope. When he first became president, he's like, what am I doing here? And yet he fought the good fight. Okay. It's not just FDR.
James?
That's true. Harry Truman was a hero. But what did he accomplish besides being a great man?
Well,
and let me say, what about LBJ?
Marshall Plan, anybody?
I think Barack is more like LBJ. LBJ was a great president. I mean, he's more moral than LBJ. LBJ wasn't very, very principled. But both he and LBJ were and are super smart. And they look simply to get things done.
James, none of us here are Obama haters. I want to be very clear about that. All of us want the president to do better. All of us voted for him. All of us supported him. All of us are going to vote for him in 2012. We think we can help him by having him have some more leadership. Yeah. He needs
and
to get out there
and
more.
And I disagree with you. I disagree with you, James, on one thing. You know, yes, you have to pick your battles, but to not fight a battle just because you're going to lose is not enough.
Look at what the Republicans do all the time.
That's right.
We're going to change. We think
we're
that we have to change the Constitution.
And they know they're going to lose.
The 18th Amendment, 14th Amendment, every amendment. They know that.
And their base gets out there and cheers, and they don't succeed, and they get a lot of
it's
money and support.
Throwing some red meat to your base.
That's
every now
right.
and then. Yeah, throw me some
red
meat.
We need some red meat. I'm hungry. Give me some meat now. Yeah, wait,
no,
that could be
exactly
taken the wrong way.
Calm down. Breathe, gentlemen, breathe. Holy cow, these guys, you know, got to change the dosage. There's no question about it.
We got some paddles in the corner to shock Mark if he starts, if he goes into defibrillation.
The sad thing is, I'm the more moderate guy on the panel. If I'm this angry, what do we think about our resident aging hippie here? I mean, come on.
It's a dosage problem, Mark.
All right, trust me, it's a dosage problem.
All right, Tahoti, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly, but if not, correct me.
Tahoti is close enough.
All right, we'll take it.
Hotep to you and the PFW listening audience.
Thank you.
The last legitimate president we had happened to be Kennedy. Kennedy was the type of president that will take a bullet for the people.
I don't think that was intentional there.
No,
but go ahead. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Just like Abraham Lincoln, he took a bullet for the people.
Yeah, that wasn't intentional
doing
either.
What the people asked him to do. Now, here we have Obama, which is nothing but a third term of the Bush administration. He's telling us to take a bullet for him.
That's not
now,
fair. That's too
I'm,
far.
I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to listen to you guys how you respond to this.
Okay.
The Republican and the Democratic Party are two wings of the same evil bird.
Yeah, you and I agree.
Bought and paid for
you
by
and I
corporate
agree.
America and the banksters.
You and I don't
and so
agree.
So Obama is doing nothing but what he was told to do. And he's not an idiot. He knows exactly what he was told to do, and he's doing it. So don't expect him to jump up now and be someone that he was not when he was hired for this job.
Okay, let's accept that, Tahoti. And, you know, my point is I do accept that. But I don't care if he stands up or not. I want to know when the American people are going to stand up. That's what I
right.
want. I mean, how much more pain? It's going to get a lot more painful. And maybe that's what has to happen. You know, before anything happens.
It is. I firmly believe. You know, unfortunately, people learn from pain.
Yeah.
People, you know, you try to tell people our healthcare costs are going to destroy our economy. They're not going to learn until it happens.
Right.
You know, it's
fascinating our caller's response to our discussion today. Half of them are saying you're being too harsh on Obama, and the other half are saying Obama's a tool of the right.
They're even more harsh on.
Exactly. And actually, we're staying in the middle. My thing is, look, do I think Obama's off track? I do. All right? Do I think that he actually means well? I do. Do I think he's a tool of the right? I don't. Do I think he's equivalent to the Republicans? I don't. Do I think he'd be doing more to support the progressive cause? You bet I do.
And I'll say this. Let me tell you something. If my own, look, I love my sisters. I have a bunch of sisters. If my sisters do something that I don't like, I'm going to say, look,
for
that's
their sake.
Stupid, don't do that.
Right?
So, yes, for their own sake, I support Obama. I love President Obama. I have nothing but love for the guy. And I support a lot of things. I was, you know, happy to see healthcare go through. I would have hoped it would have been a lot further to the left, but it wasn't. But whatever the case may be, it was an effort. Yes, there's some things have happened. But it doesn't benefit him for me to pat him on the back and sit there and smooch all over him when he's doing things that aren't going to help him. If my sister is an alcoholic or a heroin addict, it don't help her for me to say, well, you know, you're fine.
That's a good analogy.
So if he's screwing up, it's not going to help him.
We need
to help him help himself.
We need some serious intervention.
That's it. We need a public intervention. That's it. We go out in the streets and we have an Obama intervention.
That's right.
That's what we need.
That's a great idea.
This is your left hand. Lean this way a little bit. Yeah.
We love you, Obama. Yeah. We want you to succeed.
We want you to succeed.
Get off the corporate drugs.
Right. All right. Let's go to our next caller. We've only got a few minutes left, and hopefully we've got two callers. We've got RG there and Hart.
Hart.
And Hart, you're next. Hart,
Hart give
speak
us Hart.
To us.
It's me, right?
Hello,
it
Hart.
It is you,
yes.
Indeed.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. We want you to succeed. Do we want you to die? No. And does he want to die? No. So let Mr. Obama have his influence after he leaves office.
Ooh.
Because he will die if he does not follow a certain protocol.
You think he'll be shot?
Saddam and other persons who speak out in support of the Palestinians, as an example.
I don't know. You know, I certainly hope, Hart, that you are wrong. I mean, and I fear that as well. I honestly do. You know, and I don't agree with the other caller, you know, that he should be willing to take a bullet for the American people.
I don't think the other presidents were willing to. I don't think they were willing participants in their own assassination.
But I mean, you know, but the point is, you do need, and I think the caller was right in that, and I think, you know, you've brought up an interesting but frightening point. But nevertheless, if you are going to try to be the leader of the Western world, yeah, there is a lot of risk in that. There's a lot of risk no matter who you are if you're going to take that position. And you have to know that going in, and you have to do your best, and you have to lead. You know, if that's what's keeping him from doing something, you know, that...
It does, well,
that
let me
is,
say this.
That is that tragic does, that, well, in so many levels.
I'll tell you why it doesn't make sense. I'm black.
I wouldn't say it doesn't
no,
make sense.
I'm telling you why it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
I'm black. And let me tell you.
You are?
You remember.
Oh, so, I was wondering how you got that great chair.
Try to pay attention.
I'm sorry. Mark.
Do you remember one of the reasons that Colin Powell didn't run for president? You remember? One of the reasons what
he's
his wife said? His wife was concerned and afraid. Or at least it was widely reported that his wife had some fear and concern. And as we all know, it was legitimate. Barack Obama had no shortage of death threats. If you remember, he was the first person who had to get Secret Service, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say this. If we're looking at him saying, well, if I don't do this, if I do this or that, you know, I'll be assassinated. I think if that was what he was afraid of,
he would
as a
have
black
run in
person,
the first place.
He would take my, I'm black. Mm-hmm. So take my word from it. I would think twice about running for president before Barack Obama because I'd be considered, you know, one of these guys is going to try to put a bullet between my eyes. So I don't think that he's running scared of being assassinated. I think Barack Obama is trying to be the president of the independents. And I think that's one of the big problems.
It is. Okay, we've only got a few minutes here. RG. RG, welcome again, and very quickly, your point.
Howdy, gang. How's it going tonight?
We're doing fine.
All right, got to be quick. Is this an essay question or a multiple choice question on who stole the bully pulpit?
Multiple guess.
I don't have time for an essay.
So no, okay. This is false or false? I mean, true or false.
There's an outfit, you know, everything now in political strategies is digitized, and so there's an outfit called Bully Pulpit Interactive. That, if you go to their website, it looks almost identical to the Obama for America website, and it's involved with marketing strategies, fundraising, so forth and so on. So I think that aside from that strategy for the 2012 campaign, that ostensibly Boehner seems to have done so, because he before this
he stole the bully pulpit.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
I think to some extent. And
yeah, I think you're right.
And more
he doesn't have that,
that
much charisma.
What, at what point with your earlier question did the president's decision to go into Libya become the threshold of repugnancy to the Constitution? And I'll let Mark answer that.
Not even going to let Mark answer that because we're out of time here. We got some people to thank. We thank Dave, our engineer, our wonderful engineer over there. Thank you, Dave, again.
Thank you, Dave.
As always, we got to thank the WPFW staff. We got to mention that Brother Ah is on in just a few
moments.
And
next week?
And he's back with us. Brother Ah, you know, has been off the air for quite a while, and he's been healing.
And he's been healing, and he's doing very well.
He's going to be joining us.
To
tonight, and we are very grateful that he is going to be with us, going to be with you in just a few moments here. And
next week
we'll be at Ben's Next Door.
1211 U Street,
at 7 o'clock. Seeking a live audience.
Some people have asked,
ideas.
By the way, if you can't find us, we're all the way in the back. If you go in 1211 U Street, just keep on going back. Go up the stairs. There's Carolyn Romano's beautiful sign up there. We're behind that sign, and we're ready to talk with you 7 to 8 p.m. Next Tuesday.
We're way up there.
We are way up there.
Way up there. I am Terry D. Kester. It's a pleasure to have been talking to you on the Raucous Caucus. You can reach me on Facebook. You can reach
Mark Levine. I have just started to tweet. Do you want to be my early adopter?
No,
you want to be an early adopter?
Oh, no.
One of my first 20 tweeties?
Oh, no.
Mark Levine TV, because I do TV too.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Follow me on my tweets.
It's the end of the world as we know it. You can Facebook me at Garland Nixon or email me at garlandn@gmail.com.
Okay, and we are waiting for you all to join us on the streets. Thank you so much. We'll be with you next week. Good night. Can I?